Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Get ready to hear a trio of women in the business of creating and overseeing television series. First at bat, Yulene Kang from I Ship It, a musical comedy coming soon to the CW. She joins me next. Uma Thurman and Tony Goldwyn pair up in Chambers, Netflix's mind-bending drama arriving April 26. Creator executive producer Leah Rachel turns to us next half hour. And year 18 of The Amazing Race begins Wednesday on CBS. We'll learn what makes this multi-Emmy winning global trek tick next hour from co-creator executive producer Elise Dungieri. Also ahead, Tiger's CBS Hole-in-One, the Lena Waithe series TBS Let Slip to BET, and our classic trivia question. Hello everyone, I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised, brought to you by Audible.com, proud development partner of the annual New York Television Festival, and the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. For details later in the program. Happy Tax-Getting Monday to you and all. Welcome to the program All About Television. Big night edition for you with a theme, women who are in the business of creating and producing television series. And we have a trio of them coming your way over the next 90 minutes, and we invite you to stay tuned and be involved in the program. How? You pick up the phone and you dial in with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number's good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. Another way you get involved is our chat room, and today we are debuting a brand new chat room format at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So use the phone or the room. Either way, we hear you, and we will get you involved ASAP. And while the program is on the air, you can connect to us by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk or speaker screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. 57 degrees at the top of the hour here in the Big Apple, and we will have Yulene Kang from I Ship It on the CW after these news notes. Two big television highlights yesterday, Game of Thrones' final season launch on HBO, and Tiger Woods' big Masters win over at CBS. Now, we can't say at this hour how many people tuned into Game of Thrones, but we can tell you Tiger's first major golf victory in 5 years was the highest-rated golf telecast on any channel in the last 12 months. That despite CBS going live from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. yesterday for the final Masters round, moved up to avoid a major rain and windstorm from Texas. CBS gained more viewers from a four-hour replay that started immediately after their live coverage. Another series from creative producer Lena Waithe is moving forward. A series TBS passed over and BET picked up. 20s deals with a lesbian woman and her friends, adapted from a series of YouTube videos. TBS put a pilot together last year and let things stop there. BET will make 8 episodes with Beta executive producer and Susan Falls Hills as co-showrunner. This is Waithe's second BET effort, with her adaptation of the hit movie Boomerang launching 2 months ago and set to return next year. This just in, the comeback of Court TV will begin May 8th. Now under E.W. Scripps Company ownership, under its Catch Network banner, the All Trials channel will begin its live programming schedule at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, ending with a 3-hour closing arguments program weeknights from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Court TV will be carried, depending on your area, either over cable, satellite, multicast, and in some cases, smart TV sets and smart TV devices. Now a trio of quickies before we get to our first guest. Shrill, the comedy starring Andy Bryant from Saturday Night Live, picked up an 8-episode second season on Hulu this afternoon. Creator Ali Rushfield was on this program last month. You can check that out on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised and irradio.com. Archer will begin its 10th season via FXX May 29th, and NBC has renewed rookie drama Manifest for a second season this fall. That's news notes for today. As mentioned at the top, today we're going to bring you a very unique 90 minutes. All the people you will hear as our guests are women, all in one business, creating and producing their own television series. Our first guest is someone whose series is about to graduate from CWC, that's the digital service done by the CW, to the CW Broadcast Network this summer. The program is called I Ship It. It will go into a second season through the CW. And joining us live from Los Angeles is its creator and executive producer, Yulene Kang. Yulene, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Tell us how I Ship It got started.
So it actually got started as a short film that was about a girl named Zoe who was kind of trying to take down her ex-boyfriend in a Wizard Rock battle of the bands. And Wizard Rock is a musical movement that celebrates Harry Potter. And then we sold that to the CW Seed as a digital series, and it kind of got retooled as a story of this girl who's similarly trying to take down her ex-boyfriend in kind of a nerd rock battle of the bands. And then for season two, I decided to retool it once more, and this time kind of tell a new version of a fangirl fantasy, which is about how a girl goes from becoming a fan fiction writer to becoming a creator in her own right, which I would say is probably the most personal iteration of the story since I was a fan fiction writer myself.
And how did being a fan fiction writer get you to think that something about fandom or about fans would make a good comedy series?
You know, I think being a fan fiction writer was such a big part of my life back when I was in high school, and I was just kind of aspiring. You know, I didn't even know that writing for television was a thing that I could do. I just knew that I loved these worlds and I wanted to play in them for as long as I possibly could. And I think I like to tell stories that are about people who are obsessed with things. And I also like telling stories that, that have some element of magic to them. And to me, creativity is its own kind of magic. So yeah, that's kind of what I wanted to explore.
Mm-hmm. So once you got to go ahead from CW to develop this first of the digital series, what was the transition like to go from writing fiction to writing TV scripts?
Well, I had done a bunch of like short films and web series, so I had kind of like dipped my toes in those waters and written a couple of scripts before then. But I think what was interesting about working with the CW was it was kind of like doing a version of indie television almost, where we were getting to do like studio notes and network notes and developing it in a way that I hadn't when I had like complete control over my own thing. So that was really interesting for me, and I learned a lot for sure.
Mm-hmm. With this series, by the way, how did you come up with the title I Ship It?
So I Ship It is a fandom term, kind of. It means that you're really rooting for a couple to get together. Like, if you watched Game of Thrones last night, you might be like, oh, watching Gendry and Arya, and it was like, oh, I ship them. So I just kind of wanted to play with a term that a lot of people in fandom would recognize.
And what about fandom? What do you want to say about what fandom is like? Or take your experience as a fan or writing fan fiction and bring that to television. What did you want to say?
Yeah, you know, I think in the past we've seen a lot of stories where fangirls and like fanboys will show up, but they're kind of the butt of the joke, or there's somebody who just has a moment and disappears as like a nod to the fandoms that exist for these big shows. But I wanted to tell a story where the fangirl is very much the protagonist, and it is her story that we're focused on, just because I think that this upcoming generation of fangirls is the next generation of creators. And maybe I just think that because I count myself as one of them, but that's kind of what was important to me, is giving a fangirl the spotlight for once.
Mm-hmm. The program is called I Ship It, and it's coming this summer on the CW. But right now you can catch at least the first season of it on CWC. That's the digital service of the CW. It's available in many places, mobile, social media, as well as in some cases smart TV sets and smart devices. And we've got Ewan Kang. She's the creator and executive producer of the series. She's one of our first of three guests you will be hearing today on Tomorrow Be Televised. Joining us live from Los Angeles. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Delighted to have you aboard on this Monday afternoon. It's the Ides of April, tax day. Yes, don't forget, get your stuff in before midnight, one way or the other. And if you'd like to speak to Ewan, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, a guest we've had on before, the person that put E when it was movie time on the mat, Larry Namer, will join us. He now runs his own company, Meta Global Entertainment, And what he wants to do is present programming both in China and maybe bring some of that to the United States. Right now, he's working on a Bruce Lee competition project, and he may be working on what may be a television series or a movie or both called Empress. Larry Naiman will tell us all about it, and we'll get his thoughts about where he sees the U.S. TV scene at, especially the scripted scene in light of things like Netflix and Apple and Disney Plus and so on. Larry Naiman, live with us Friday, Good Friday 2019, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. So again, Ewan, give us the sense of the first season and then the second season. Do you have the same cast in both, and how does the plot switch from the first season to the second?
Yeah, so season one, I would say, was kind of a callback to the short film it was originally based on, and it was much more about, like, kind of the music industry almost, whereas season two is almost a total series reboot, and we bring back some of the same cast members, but it's almost like it's an anthology series where the new season doesn't require a viewing of the previous season for context. But I think what ties them both together is this idea of the show being a fangirl fantasy, and each version we're still putting a fangirl front and center as a protagonist. It's this kind of what area are we exploring with her. So in season one, that was kind of music. Season two, it's much more TV and fan fiction and writing.
And in the second season, it's Helen Highfield who plays Ella, the lead character. What about her and her performance suggested she would be great for this role?
Well, I think Helen is so wonderful. She's one of the most talented actresses I've ever had the pleasure of working with. She has this way of delivering this long-winded dialogue and making it seem like she's coming up with it on the spot, which I really love. And she's just so likable. Like, initially, I think in season one, I was writing a protagonist that I wasn't sure people would like, because she's kind of, like, obsessive and fangirly, and so I was kind of leaning into that in the writing, and then as soon as Helen started delivering the dialogue, it was like, wow, this is a completely different character than who we first thought she was, in the best possible way, where it's almost impossible not to like her because she's so infectious. And so in season two, when we were kind of writing a new version of Ella, we really leaned into that, where it's her enthusiasm is part of her charm.
Now, she is not only a fan, but when we meet her, when we will meet her, she works at a shipping agency. So the iShip, it works very well. The title works very well with the character. And she gets involved with this series called Superstition. And and then things do what?
Well, so then she's been writing fan fiction for the show Superstition for a really long time, and then one of her actress friends has to deliver flowers to the showrunner of Superstition because she just had an audition, and that's when Ella, since she works at the shipping agency, she's like, I'm going to volunteer and take these flowers and deliver them to the set so I can get a glimpse of this magical world that I love so much. And as soon as she kind of goes through the looking glass over to the world of Superstition, she really can't let it go, and she feels like she has to find a way to be a part of it, and then have her fangirl life and her real work life start colliding.
By the way, I want to welcome our two people in our chat room right now. And if you have a question or a comment for you, either put it in the room or give us a call, 646-652-2906. When people hear that your series is musical comedy, one natural question is probably going to be, was Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which the CW is bringing to an end this year, was that an inspiration for you?
I mean, I love the show. It's so great. Actually, one of our editor, Kyla Pluis, she also worked as an editor on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. And so it's definitely been a point of inspiration for us. I would say we handle our song treatments a little differently. Crazy Ex-Girlfriend will do kind of parodies of songs or kind of send-ups of tropes. And they're very much deconstructing romance tropes, which I found super interesting. But I personally I just love romance so much that I'm not as interested in deconstructing it as I am telling a compelling version of it. So I would say we're kind of on two different sides of the same coin, where we're inspecting rom-coms through musicals, but they're maybe doing more of a deconstruction and more of a send-up of the tropes, whereas I'm kind of like fangirling all over the tropes.
Did you write the original songs for this, or original music, or who, if not you, who did?
Oh, I absolutely did not. It's the great tragedy of my life that I don't have any musical talent. I have a very talented composer that I work with, and then three very talented songwriters, Kristen Hippie, who also did the short film and season one songs, and Rusty Clanton and Ariel McCleary, who are two songwriters that we brought on this season to kind of help write even more songs and kind of bring our songs to more of a, in the past, I think I would say our songs were more like pop songs, whereas this season we were kind of trying to call back to these classic, like MGM Hollywood musicals. So we just wanted to play a little bit more.
What was it like for you to do those sequences that would remind somebody of films like Singing in the Rain or The Bandwagon or American Paris, you know, the great MGM musicals with the likes of Gene Kelly and Fred Astaire and so on?
Oh, my gosh. I had so much fun doing research for this movie because it was just watching all of these classic movie musicals that I grew up watching because, you know, my parents and I, we came to the States when in, like, the 90s, and we didn't speak any English. So we watched a lot of musicals at the time because you can still kind of enjoy a musical when you don't speak the language fully, and it helps you kind of pick up the language. So I grew up on, like, Singing in the Rain and The Sound of Music, and I really wanted to kind of have an homage to those things in terms of our cinematography and our lighting and our costume design. I remember at one point I was just like, I want a ladder and I want a purple dress. So it was tons of fun.
Debbie Wells will love you for that. That's the reference to the Singing in the Rain number that she and Gene Kelly have their first dance in.
Mm-hmm.
That. You're also working with an organization that's been doing quite a lot in digital. I believe this may be their first or one of their first television series. That's Newform, the company that Ron Howe is involved with. Kathleen Grace is one of the key people at Newform Digital. Discovery, I believe, at one point was that's Discovery behind the Discovery Channel, et cetera, was one of their key founders in terms of investment. What's it been like working with Kathleen and her team on their series?
They've been super great. They've been, you know, supporters since the short film. They were the ones who first reached out and were like, would you like to take part in this incubator series we're doing of, like, short films that we'd eventually like to turn into series? And I was like, yeah, absolutely, I would love to. And it was just really nice that they saw me as a young creator on YouTube and believed in me enough to take that chance on me. So it's been really great working with them from the short film to the first season to our second season that everybody can stream right now on the CW feed for 2 weeks.
Yoon Kang is the creative executive producer of I Ship It. You can currently catch it on CWC. That's the digital service. The CW is available on mobile, available on social media, also in some markets available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. But this summer, it becomes a series on the CW. And as soon as we find out day and time of premiere, we will let you know. You will join us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tamavi Televised. First of three guests, all women, all creators, and executive producers of their own television series. If you have a question or comment for you during our remaining moments with her, give us the ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Monday on Tomorrow We Televised, we're going to give you the first of three episodes that we are doing back-to-back-to-back, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week. Among our guests next Monday, we'll have a pair that's doing a very unique live series. It's a mini-series from Nature on PBS. It's called American Spring Live. We'll have the executive producer, Al Berman, and we'll have the senior producer, Ann Johnson Prue. That's what, coming up Monday, Nature American Spring Live, which, by the way, premieres the following Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, live in prime time on many PBS stations. That's coming up next Monday, 3:30 Eastern Pacific, on Tamavi Televised. Once again, next week's shows, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, all at our regular time, 3:30 Eastern, noon Pacific. You, in your work now as somebody who's doing television as opposed to doing digital, What are you discovering for yourself in terms of not only creating your own show, but actually, you know, running it as the executive producer?
You know, I think for me, I always expected things to change or for there to be a moment where it's like, you're in the big leagues now, kid. I don't know. I think I've watched too many TV shows and movies. But what I've found is it actually is, you know, living the dream looks a lot like chasing the dream. And it's just doing the same things you've been doing on the same laptops you've been working on this entire time. So I think more than anything, it surprised me is that it's not that different from what it was.
Mm-hmm. And where do you want to go? If you get, let's say, you know, this works this summer and you get a third season, you want to stay with the anthology format or you want to keep the character of Ella as played by Helen Highfield and take her, this situation, into like the next level?
Yeah, I would want to kind of stay in this world of like superstition and Ella as a fan fiction writer and kind of explore that more, because I think there's always more to explore, especially on this journey of going from a fangirl to a creator. It's a journey that I'm still personally on. So I think I would stay with her a little bit longer. I'm not ready to say goodbye to this iteration yet.
Mm-hmm. Before you go, I just wanted to ask you about your other fellow castmates on the show. Riley Nelville plays Tim, who's sort of like, as we hear in the CW press release, or see in the CW press release, he's charming, but he's also sort of ordinary vanilla. And then there's, and I hope I get this right, Yasmin Al-Bustami, who plays the friend of Ella, Sasha. Talk about those two characters and how they interplay either with each other and also with Ella.
Yeah, Tim is Ella's boyfriend of a long period of time. I think in season one, he's kind of like that best friend that you've always thought maybe something could happen with, whereas in season two, he's that guy that has been at your side and has been a comfortable relationship for you for so long that you're, it's kind of like second nature to be with him, and you haven't really thought about what life would be like without him. So when things change for both of them, both Ella and Tim, in terms of their living situations, it kind of mixes them up and jolts them out of their patterns, and they have to really think about, do we belong together? Is this something we want to continue? It's basically this a slightly more aged up version. I think every version of I Ship It has been a reflection of who I was at the point I was writing it. And so this one, it's like very much more a late 20s relationship examination. And then Yasmin Al-Bustami, she plays Sasha, who is one of my favorite characters, because Sasha is just such a ball of light. She's like, we call her a precious cinnamon roll in our writer's room, just because she's so sweet and deserves good things. And so it's fun to make terrible things happen to her.
Who are your role models? Who do you look up to as inspirations for not just your writing, but also in producing a series?
I would say Shonda Rhimes is somebody who I admire so much. You know, she's built an entire empire off of romance, and that is my absolute favorite genre. So it's something I would also like to do. Joss Whedon is another person who I've loved his work, and it's been super influential in terms of my own creative journey. Like Buffy the Vampire Slayer was just iconic. So those are the first ones that are coming to mind, but I would also say in the feature space, Nora Ephron is somebody that I deeply admire. Nancy Myers is another one. I think there are a lot of, I've been very lucky in that there are a lot of female creators that have kind of already reached the heights that I would one day aspire to. Issa Rae is another one. I think everything she's been doing on Insecure is fantastic.
Right now, you can see I Ship It on CWC. That is the CW's digital network, and that's available on mobile. It's available on social media sites, and it's also available on smart TV sets and smart devices, depending on where you are and what smart set or TV device model you have. But starting this summer, it will be getting a run on the CW, on TV stations all over the country. So check your local listings when that show is getting ready to air. Check your local listings for where the CW station is in your area. Here in New York, it's WPX-TV, Channel 11, and weeknights. from 8 to 10 p.m. Also on Sunday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. as well. And if you want more details about the program online, as well as CWC, which, by the way, is now in its third year and won a 2016 Streamy Award, here's where you go online, www.cwtv.com. It's www.cwtv.com and cwc.com as well. Once again, I ship it coming to the CW this summer. You and Carrie, the creator, executive producer, thank you very much for joining us. Congratulations on graduating what was a short film, a YouTube deal, now in the world of broadcast and series TV. Been a pleasure to have you on. All the very best of luck with you and your career in the series.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. You have a great week ahead. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Yuen Kang from iShipIt joining us live from Los Angeles. More Tomorrow with Tovai is coming your way momentarily, but first some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. As we mentioned earlier, Game of Thrones premiered its final season on HBO last night. And if you don't want to wait for the next episode, particularly if you're new to GFT, how about checking out the first book of the series, as originally put together by George R.R. Martin, its creator. That's The Song of Fire and Ice. Well, now you can do so and hear it in audio form, narrated by the brilliant actor, remember from Beauty and the Beast, Roy Dotrice, the TV series. Wonderful actor. He was terrific on that series. And now you can hear it. That's right, A Game of Thrones through Audible.com. And it can be one of three audio books that you can take right now and order through a special trial offer. You know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and very much inspiration. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from, including a growing catalog of Audible originals. That's everything from one woman and one man shows, Broadway, off-Broadway regional theater, and original productions. And you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or iHeartRadio. And all you have to do to get in on this wonderful audio feast is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised for a one-month trial. You get three free audio books, one from the regular catalog, two from Audible Originals, whatever ones you want, and you get great customer service along the way from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. So, check out audibletrial.com/televised, get that trial, get those three free audio books, and hear for yourself why Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. This is Tomorrow Televised. We are the program All About the Tube, and we are with you Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. And remember, if you come in late on any episode, or you want to catch up on episodes you missed, we make it easy for you. All you have to do is go anytime to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And our show is also podcast 24/7 at iTunes, Apple TV, the Spreaker Podcast app, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. And when it comes to iHeartRadio, all you have to do is go to their website, iHeartRadio.com, put Tomorrow Will Be Televised in the search bar, click it, and you get our shows then and there. We're now in our second year, by the way, in iHeart, and we really do appreciate them for expanding our audience to some of you out there. By the way, next week, we are having a three-episode week, and it's back-to-back-to-back. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday next week, it's April 22nd, 24th, at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. So make sure you make the time available. We are planning to have some wonderful guests aboard all 3 days. And we already have a pair of guests coming up on our first episode of the week on Monday. That's Al Berman and Ann Johnson Plum. They are executive and senior producer, respectively, of the special three-part live nature miniseries that's running the following Monday and Wednesday at many PBS stations, American Spring Live. It's a very unique nature miniseries. Al Berman was with us, I believe, last year on another project that he was doing at the time for National Geographic, very similar in nature. So be sure to join us. That'll be two of our guests for Monday's episode, first of three, back-to-back-to-back. That's April 22nd, 23rd, and 24th, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And if you want more of what I do about the world of television, check out my columns in MediaNews.com. It's the B2B website of great thought leadership on the worlds of television and media. You can find my columns there dealing with the world of advanced interactive TV, columns about the upfront events for the likes of Discovery, A&E, Crown Media, Fox News Channel, and Fox Business Network, and a whole lot more. So check out not only my columns, but also columns from people like Jack Myers, E.B. Marsh, Charlene Weiser, Juan Ayala, Ed Martin, and the whole gang who make Media Village a very special website to come back and enjoy time after time after time. That's www.mediavillage.com. www.meetandillies.com. We'll come back. We'll go to New York, and we will speak with the person behind a brand-new series premiering next week on Netflix. It's called Chambers. It pairs Uma Thurman and Tony Goldwyn in a very mind-bending supernatural drama. The creator executive producer, Leah Rachel, will join me after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio in the galaxy, www.blogtalkradio.com and speaker.com. More than 35 million listeners together around the world every month and growing. BTR Speaker, your home for the Key of the Unplugged show. Check it out tonight. It's one of the most unique programs in all of internet radio, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, the Key of the Unplugged show right here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. And don't forget, both websites are available 24-7 with some of the best programming at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half, or I should say the second part of our 90-day edition this Monday of Tomorrow Televised. Sun App Avenue live from New York, 57 degrees under cloudy skies right here in the Big Apple at the bottom of the hour. Thank you for tuning in. And if you have a question or comment for our guest in the next hour, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. We have 3 guests in our chat room already. So use that room, use our phones, make it happen, and be interactive with us. Next Friday, Netflix will premiere a program that has been talked about for a while. It's called Chambers, and it's all about a very mind-bending pairing of the wonderful actress Uma Thurman and the former co-star of Scandal, Tony Goldwyn. And it's a very unusual tale about a heart attack victim who gets into a very unique mystery. Joining us live here in New York, the creator and executive producer, Leah Rachel. Hello, Leah.
Hi.
Delighted to have you with us, Leah. How did you come up with the idea for Chambers?
I was really interested in telling a story about young female identity and, you know, blended that with something very psychologically interesting to me and kind of questions that I ask in my own life about what happens to a soul after it dies. And those two things kind of smashed together and became the strange tale that is Chambers.
What one in your own life, Leah, inspired you to write this and put this together?
I think my adolescence and just, you know, trying to retain your own identity in a world that, you know, the more you grow up seems to be trying to box you into something, and the fight against that and sort of the fight to hold on to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Is this your first television series?
It is my very first television series, yes.
So, 2 for 2, we just had you and Kang talk about what is now her first television series coming up, I Ship It on the CW, and now you're also in the same boat as well. What's it been like for you to put this series together and have it be your TV debut?
It was an incredible, incredible learning experience the whole way through. It was also, I think, that some of the, you know, Chambers is such a, it's tonally very specific, and we are trying not to, you know, for it to feel like its own beast and its own thing. So I think some of the naivete of having not done this before was helpful in areas. And we tried to use, you know, sometimes we got happy accidents, and I really tried to use this being my kind of virginal experience in television to our advantage. So it was mind-blowing learning experience, but we had, you know, Uma Thurman, Tony Goldwyn, some great OGs around to really, you know, help guide and support us as well. A lot of our young cast was unknown as well.
When you learned that you were going to have someone like Uma and someone like Tony, in along with these casts of young, mostly young newcomers in terms of being known to the public through television, what did it do for you? Did it like raise your spirits? Like, oh my God, this is what I'm getting involved. This is what I'm getting involved with. Is it more exciting thing than I thought?
Yeah, it definitely raised my spirit. It was, you know, when we were casting the role of Nancy, our casting director gave me like a packet just with casting ideas, and Uma was at the top for Nancy, and I think I laughed out loud when I saw it because I didn't think it was a reality. I didn't think it was a possibility, and next thing I knew, I was in New York City talking to her with Alfonso Gomez-Rejon, our director, and we talked to her for an extremely long time in her apartment and really just all saw the same story. And once she came on board, it was very,
you know, it helped us pull other cast, and Tony came on board, and I think it was a great balance for our young actors too, and some of the less experienced cast to sort of have mentorship the whole way through. That was really incredible. So it was pretty mind blowing though, you know, like I've looked up to Uma as an actress and been a fan of hers forever. So for her to, you know, become a collaborator was really a dream come true.
Mm-hmm. By the way, we have another person that just joined our chat room. Simon Apple04 by name. You can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com. So welcome aboard in the room. If you have a question or comment, put it in the room or give us a call, 646-652-2906. We'd love you to be interactive with us. Share about what the story is all about and how the characters develop.
Sure. So the story is about a 17-year-old girl who has a freak heart attack, and she receives a heart transplant from a sort of rich suburban perfect prom queen. And slowly the organ within this girl starts changing her, and she starts developing darker personality traits than she had before the transplant. And this delves her into a mystery that is continually kind of flowering and opening up about the real way that her organ donor died. So you know, eventually in the series are going to find that out, but even that mystery is going to open up something else. So it's, you know, again, it's a story about two identities sort of in one body. And also there's a long arcing mystery about how Becky really died. And all the characters around, you know, one girl's from, they're from different sides of the tracks a little bit. And the families of both are also, you know, they're all dealing with an impossible situation. You know, for Uma's character and Tony's character, they play the parents of the teenage girl who died, and they develop a little bit of a sometimes bordering on unhealthy relationship with the girl who their daughter's heart went into. So it's families trying to deal with an impossible situation. Nobody's who you think. Everybody's got a secret, but it might not necessarily tie into the main mystery thread.
You're hearing Leah Rachel. She is the creator and executive producer of Chambers. It's one of Netflix's newest television series, and it premieres on Friday, April 26th on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. Leah joins us live here in New York this half hour. Second of three women you're hearing on this program today, all of whom have one thing in common. They've created and executive produced their own series. And they're with us live here on Tomorrow Be Televised. So I'm Adam, with you live from New York. Delighted to have you joining us on this Eyes of April edition of 2019. Yes, it is tax deadline day. If you haven't gotten it going, please do so before midnight tonight. But in the meantime, we're glad you're listening to us. And if you have a question or a comment for Leah, give us a call, 646-652-2906. Be interactive with us or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And by the way, if you're using our chat room, you may have noticed we have a brand new chat room format. So we hope that you enjoy it. Let me know what you think. Email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com, or find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, UBC Simon, TWBC. We'd love to have you get involved and give us your feedback. Really appreciate it. Friday on Smart Be Televised, the person that put E on the map when it was originally called Movie Time, we'll be back with us. That's Larry Namer. He's got a company called Maiden Global Entertainment, and they're out to create programming in China, some of which might come here. And we'll talk about one of his latest projects. It's a competition that's with involving Bruce Lee. It's our second Bruce Lee segment. Recently, we had the creator of Warrior, which just premiered early this month on Cinemax, Jonathan Schwapper. And by the way, you can hear that segment at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, or on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Leah, I have a feeling that one of the things that I wanted to ask you, you gave Netflix a quote, and there's two parts of the quote that I found was very interesting. One was that you consider this program an exploration into the different ways we metabolize trauma. What do you mean by that?
Everybody in the show comes from a very different walk of life, and they're all dealing with an out-of-order, untimely death. And some people, you know, in my own life, I think that I've witnessed and have gone through, you know, a death that shouldn't have happened as fast as it did. And I think that some people turn to spirit, whatever their God or belief system might be. Some people turn to the earth. Some people don't believe in anything. And I think that all of these things become very heightened when you're faced with a tragedy. Whether you fiercely believe in something or fiercely don't, it's a way to get through it. And that was felt extremely right for me for psychological horror as well. And, you know, Sasha, our lead character, who's, you know, had her life saved because this other girl died, is dealing with survivor's guilt as well. So in the show, there's a lot of, you know, is this in her head? Is it not? Is this really happening? Or is this just her justification for why she got to live and this other girl died? So it it deals with a lot of people having a fucked up situation and it sometimes going to extremes because of it, kind of self-soothe and take care of it, make sense of it all for something that ultimately makes no fucking sense.
Yeah. By the way, we're a family-friendly show, just so you know, Leah, so we have to watch out for the F-word. But I didn't want to mention that in this part of the that's okay. But anyway, but the other part of this, and again, we'll clean up the language here a little bit, we'll clean up the one word. But you also said, what starts out as a grounded human story eventually pivots into something, as you just suggested, far more strange than or F-up than you were expecting. And it sounds also, too, like you're trying to juxtapose a lot of things. You're trying to sort of balance out like these different ways that we can go crazy.
100%. A lot of people in the show are going crazy, but it manifests in different ways. And at first, again, they're dealing with a grounded situation that is, you know, someone dying for someone else to live. And eventually the mystery, it's continually opening, peeling back, and different belief systems are being challenged and everybody's got the answer and nobody does.
And how do the characters played by Uma and Tony as parents who are also dealing with the trauma of death, how do they sort of relate to all the other characters or how do all the other characters relate to them?
Sure. Well, they, you know, in the first episode, they welcome, you know, Sasha and her uncle Big Frank into their lives. They invite them over for dinner and there's, you know, I think for anyone in that situation, there's a piece of their daughter that still remains on Earth. And depending on what you believe, it's either an organ, it's just a piece of meat, or it's the carrier of her soul. And for both of them, I think there's a level of, you know, searching to see if anything's remained in their daughter. And also, you know, they have a void. They have a void of a daughter. And Sasha is a daughter who has an uncle that's raised her, but has no, you know, biological parents that are still here with us that she knows about. And, you know, you have a motherless daughter and a daughterless mother that sort of cross healthy boundaries, I think, a lot with each other. And, you know, Tony's character, Ben, and Uma Thurman's character, Nancy, are also dealing with their own marital issues during this. And, you know, they have a son, Elliot, who is Becky's twin brother, and Sasha starts to come into their lives and at first seems to be pulling them back together as a family, and then things unravel from there. So I think they're bordering boundaries the whole time and crossing them often.
Speaking of boundaries, your main actress who plays Sasha, her name is Sivan Alrose, also crosses boundaries too in terms of her life. She's Puerto Rican. She's also a Native American, an Apache. And did you use that at all in terms of fashioning her character, the fact that she comes from two unique backgrounds?
Yeah, I mean, I think she's, you know, as a human being is, you know, has two strong heritages, you know, and is like, you know, wants to know both of them, is very aware of both of them, and they're both very underrepresented communities on screen, which I think was really interesting for her. And, you know, in America in general, I think most of us come from quite a few places and are, you know, can be pulled from family to family, mother to father, culture to culture, tribe to tribe. And in the end, when something devastating happens, I think humans kind of, they hit the floor together. So it's a interesting thing where that's a part of the story, but it's definitely, it's a human story above all and sort of where trauma and impossible situations can push us.
Talk about the rest of the cast, because they also have very unique backgrounds. It's a very diverse young cast, and as I said before, this is a cast that is very new to television. They may have done short films, they may have had guest shots on a series somehow or some way, but this is the first time that together all these people are contributing to your creation.
Yeah, well, it was incredible. I think we really found some diamonds in the rough for sure out there, and I went into the project wanting to cast a lot of unknown actors, especially for the teen characters, because I think there's a certain there's an unawareness of the camera that's really beautiful, and a lot of, you know, I think sometimes mannerisms are lost in the want to control a character, and for a lot of our cast, you know, who you see on screen is, you know, at different varying levels, versions of who you see off screen, and there's an electricity to it, and I think it gave us really, everybody was fighting. This was everybody's chance, the show, including mine. So I think that there was a kind of an underdog fighter spirit to it that you could really feel, and everybody was just elevating each other. And again, because a lot of them were new, we got a lot of happy accidents on film, and our director, Alfonso Gomez-Rajon, also loves working with kind of first-time actors and stuff, and is great with observing human behavior. And we really got to form the characters depending on who they were as well, because a lot of them came on quite early. But they're definitely, I think they're a group of actors that you don't see in other shows, which is exciting and what we wanted.
How's your relationship with Uma and with Tony, who has had producing experience, not just acting experience, but producing experience with some of his projects, work for you? What kind of advice or guidance or approach did they encourage you to take with them?
It was great. It was different with both, but both were very they spoke up when they saw something was like awry a little bit, but were very, let me really guide the show and never impose too much. And Uma, who was a producer, she's so smart and so wildly creative and has such incredible ideas that early on in the process when, we were talking about storylines and ideas, sometimes she'd throw something out that was just gold and we'd, run back to the writer's room with a nugget that she'd given to us that's, many of which ended up in the show and kind of inspired things. So she was definitely like super involved with her character as well. And from a producing level, really, again, mentored the young kids, I think really took Savan underneath her wing. And Uma's the most professional, she's on set on time. She's amazing to the crew. She knows every line. She's done her homework. And she gave something for the young cast to really rise up to, including Tony. And Tony is just like the most charming, incredible, egoless man. He also directed an episode, which was really, really cool. It's an episode that it's almost a bottle episode with Sasha and Nancy that are kind of facing each other in the 9th episode. So it's a very kind of theatrical, dialogue heavy episode that he got to direct, which is really special because they'd been working with him all season and I think had a trust. And it was very synergistic and kind of passed off different roles and pulled each other up when we needed help.
Mm-hmm. Talk about your director, Alfonso Gomez-Rajon. He's also executive producer with you. What's his style like? How did he approach the series?
He's incredible, and he came on quite early to the show as well. And him and I just had we speak the exact same language. We had pulled some of the same visuals for the show. We put together a visual book for the show, music, tone, colors, color palettes. What scenes smelled like, what they felt like. We both wanted to use hardly any makeup and sort of have a little bit of a documentarian feel to those first few episodes, especially with the kids. And he really lets people, he's very interested in stillness, and he doesn't over-direct. He sees what people are great at and lets them run with it. He's into individuality and the quirks that, on some shows, some directors might want to minimize, he maximizes and wants to pull it out. I think you can see it with Griffin, who plays TJ, and Savan, who plays Sasha, very much, as he just saw their chemistry and saw their quirks and just kind of let them be. He puts up the camera. He does long takes. He's balletic, I think. He was obsessed with the nature in New Mexico, same way I was. So we're always shooting at dawn and dusk, and it feels like we're making art. With Alfonso, he's after art, and it's a really beautiful thing. He's incredible, a huge supporter, help with the show.
Yeah, where did you film in New Mexico? Albuquerque, Santa Fe, someplace else?
We were in Albuquerque, in and around Albuquerque. We'd sometimes go about 30 miles out. Never went to Santa Fe, but all around Albuquerque, which I loved. Even though some people have opinions about Albuquerque, I found it incredibly inspiring.
It's a great, great city, and it has served, by the way, in the last decade and a half, as home base for a number of outstanding series. I remember for a number of years, In Plain Sight, the USC Network drama, was done out of Albuquerque, and quite a few other shows. I know, by the way, talking about CW from last half hour, there was a CW show that was produced in Albuquerque, too. It's a great, great location, and the people who do film and TV work there are marvelous. Super place to go. Chambers is the film we're talking about. Premieres on smart TV sets and smart devices on Netflix on Friday, April 26th. And we've got the creative executive producer here with us live from New York, Leah Rochelle, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Tom and Appleman with you live from New York. Be interactive with us. Give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up before the top of the hour, we'll have our classic trivia question of the week. If you know the answer, you can win the Simpsons movie DVD. So stay tuned. Get the pen and paper handy because you might be our next winner of our popular classic trivia feature. Because you were new to this world of television, did you find it easy to also invite other people who want to get into television to be new with you? Let's say direct an episode, write an episode, people who have not done television like yourself before. Did you find it easy or more willing to say, okay, just like you, I'm new, try this. You know, be on my writing team, be on my directing team, be involved in the production crew.
Sure, 100%. I mean, we, again, with this show, and kudos to Netflix for taking a bunch of crazy chances on people that had never done this before, but we had in our writer's rooms, one of my friends was kind of first time in a writer's room. He actually used to play football for Syracuse until he tore his ACL. He came into our writer's room, was incredible. Savan, who plays the lead actress, didn't have a headshot when she auditioned, had never, you know, really been in much. Don't even think she had an agent. Directors, we had directors that had, you know, done one episode of episodic television, you know, maybe a little indie here or there, but a lot of our direct sort of your typical episodic directors. And I think along with that, we got really cinematic episodes, and there was a shitload of risk taking on the show. But I think it made me more comfortable to have a lot of new people. And again, I think it makes everybody, you know, the show matters to them. Their career kind of hangs on it. So we got a lot of people that were unsafe and had to fight for it, which was great.
Well, what's it like that the fact that Netflix, which is making all sorts of programs, believes in your work enough to give you the room as a first-time series creator, producer, to, you know, make your show, whether you make mistakes along the way or not?
It's incredibly flattering, and, you know, I think that's part of what's so exciting about Netflix is I don't think I would have gotten this opportunity in kind of fierce belief from another network. I think they're really about, you know, I came in and pitched the hell out of the show, had a series viable, had the script written, knew every little detail of it. And I think they saw that I knew what the show was, and I think that they buy into that more than they do a resume. So that's incredible and risky as hell. I'm sure there were points where they were terrified, but they held my hand and really trusted me. And I think that's really exciting. I think you're getting new kind of storytellers behind the camera that way. And they're doing it. So it was very exciting, and I hope I do them well.
What are you learning about taking this on for yourself? How are you growing as a person as well as being a talent in the TV world?
I'm learning how to, you know, creatives, there's a part of show running that's sort of like managing a circus, because we're a bunch of creatives and we're all a little bit crazy. So I think, you know, learning about myself, sort of the skill set that's needed, and, you know, growing and honing that and making mistakes along the way, that as well as being sort of the creative driving force of it, you have to be the cheerleader, you have to be the parent, and, you know, you have to keep the company together. There's a lot of, you know, every production I think has issues, and it's, you know, keeping morale up and keeping your own morale up too. I learned how to work on like 4 hours of sleep a night, which was incredible, and I somehow didn't get sick at all during all of production, which is nuts because I was probably taking the worst care of my body, but the human body really takes you through crazy circumstances. So, learned how to work on four hours of sleep a night. But there was such an energy to it. I think that it felt, you know, we were in Albuquerque on location. It didn't feel glamorous. It felt like we were making a little indie film the whole time. And I think if I wouldn't known how hard it was going to be and taxing, it would have freaked me out at the beginning. But I think going in blind really just says sometimes you just have to, like, jump out of the plane and hope you have a parachute.
Given we're in an environment where a new television series can sometimes be renewed like 24 hours after the first episode appears, or even before the first episode appears, and we've seen Netflix and some other people do that. Have you already given thought to where do you want to take your characters if you get a second season?
I have. I'm starting to percolate on it and, as I say, get pregnant with the ideas. I learned a lot about the actors in this season, too, and sort of where their best strengths lie and, you know, how some of their performance changed the characters for the better and leaning into that. But I definitely, if we should be so lucky, I got a season two in my head for sure.
Chambers, it's a new supernatural, mind-bending, you can call it all kinds of things, and it all premieres a week from Friday, April 26th, on Netflix. And it's available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And if you want more details about the series, here's where you go online, www.netflix.com. It's www.netflix.com. Chambers, co-starring Uma Thurman, Tony Goldwyn, Sazan Alvaro-Rose, and a very unique and very special new young cast. And I have a hunch, by the way, you're going to be hearing a lot more about the cast in this series. Again, Chambers, premiering April 26th on Smart TV and Smart TV devices through Netflix. Leah Rochelle, the creator and executive producer, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations to get your creation off the ground. Hopefully, next Friday begins a wonderful run for your series. And it's been a pleasure to have you with us.
I hope so. Thank you for having me. Everybody watch.
All right, Leah, you got it. Take care.
Take care. Bye.
Leah Rochelle from Chambers, joining us live from New York. Now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. If you're first with the answer, you can win the Simpsons movie DVD with some nice features as well. Here's the question. What music group made the theme from SWAT? Remember that TV series on ABC, C4STAR, the group of people who try to counter all sorts of crazy crimes going on in Los Angeles? That was the series that gave, by the way, Robert Yorick his start. What music group made the theme from SWAT a number one hit in the 1970s? What music group made the theme from SWAT a number one hit? It was a one-hit wonder, too, for this group in the 1970s. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. If you're first with the correct answer, you will win the Simpsons movie DVD from 20th Century Fox with a lot of good special features in it as well. And you can be our latest winner of our classic trivia feature. Now coming up on, it's over 2.5 years now that we've done this feature. A lot of winners over that time, and you could be our next one, but you got to be in it to win it. So email your answer, simonapple04@yahoo.com, and don't forget to include your name and your full mail address. If you win, we can get the Simpsons movie DVD out to you as quickly as possible. If you don't miss the question, don't worry. We may try to play it one more time before we end today's show. We have another half hour or so to go. Or we'll play it tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook on my page and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. And once again, in order to win, get in the game. Nothing to lose, everything to gain, and all the very best. This is Tamami Televised. We are the program all about the world of TV. We're with you Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. If you're joining us for the very first time, make us a regular habit. And remember, we're on 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, most of the time. Next week, we're with you Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We usually try to have one three-episode week each month, sometimes more. And next week is a three-episode week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, at our regular time. And among our guests on Monday, we'll have the people behind a new special live nature miniseries on PBS, American Spring Live. The executive producer, Hal Berman, who we've had on before, and the senior producer, Ann Johnson Plum. That is next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here. On Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Remember, we really appreciate hearing from you. So anytime you like, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. simonapple04@yahoo.com. I do respond to emails within 24 hours. You can also use that email as part of a series that we do from time to time called A Show to Know. Is there a TV series you like that doesn't get enough attention and you think it ought to? Well, email me. Let me know. Once you communicate with me, if we use your suggestion on the air, you get the credit, no doubt. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. You can also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter. And again, if we use your suggestion for our regular series, The Show to Know, we will give you the credit. That's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. And again, you can find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. That's at UBCSimonTWBT. In addition to finding me here at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker on the Hour Radio Podcast Network, you can check out my Tomorrow Be Televised columns. They're presented regularly on Media Village. It's the B2B website that gives you lots of thought leadership about the world of TV and media and where it is all headed. You can also check out wonderful columns by my colleagues there, Evie Vaughn, Jack Myers, Charlene Weiser, Ed Martin, Juan Ayala, a whole bunch more. That's www.mediavillage.com. Coming up in the next half hour, one of the key people behind The Amazing Race, going into its 18th year this Wednesday night on CBS. Co-creator and executive producer Elise Dolcieri joins me live in an interview exclusive from Los Angeles. We have that coming your way after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio and www.spreaker.com, together reaching over 35 million people around the world every month and growing. BTR and Spreaker are your home for the next chapter. Check it out tomorrow, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, only on blogtalkradio and spreaker.com. Welcome back to the Marvy Televised. Welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour, whether it's 4 p.m. on the East Coast, 1 p.m. on the West, right here on this 5th of April, 2019, 57 degrees, top of the hour. Simon Apple, I'm with you live from the Big Apple. Happy you are aboard. We have some wonderful things happening this half hour, including a terrific guest we're having for the very first time. And we invite you to be interactive with us. All it takes, phone call from you. So ring us at 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Numbers get anywhere. You're catching us across the country, around the world, here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. We've got a chat room going. Three people already in the room. It's SimonApple04 by name. Brand new chat room format that we are debuting today. Love to hear what you think about it. So just go to SimonApple04, BlogTalkRadio.com/televised. That's BlogTalkRadio.com/televised. The chat room is SimonApple04 by name, and you can be involved with us. And while the phone is on the air, get involved with Facebook timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk or speaker screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. If you're joining us right now, we are in the midst of a very unique episode showcasing a trio of women who all have one thing in common. They create or co-create and produce television. And when it comes to our third and final guest of this day, she is someone who has co-created and executive produced one of the longest-running shows on broadcast television right now. And a show that, over 18 years, has won 10 Emmy Awards as Outstanding Reality Competition Program. The program is The Amazing Race, and it goes into its latest season this Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on CBS. Joining us live from Los Angeles in an interview exclusive, co-creator and executive producer, Elise Dolcieri. Elise, welcome into the program.
Thank you, Simon. Nice to meet you.
Same here. We've had your co-creator, Bertram, on the program a number of years ago when he was doing other projects like Cops, for example. He was involved with it so many years on Fox. But it's finally great to have you here. Can you and Bertram and Phil Hogan, your host, ever really believe that it's now 18 years since you've undertaken this journey?
No, it's remarkable and surprising every season that we do the show. We feel so fortunate when we first started doing the show in season one, we had no idea that there would ever be a season two. You know, it's television. You just don't know. So we feel very, very fortunate to have been on the air for so many years.
Why do you think it has? Why do you think this series has done so well and has lasted so long and has, along the way, taken you and your crew to so many hot spots and crazy spots of the world?
There are a few reasons I think the show has lasted so long. One of the reasons I believe that it is a show where somebody can watch it and they can relate to someone they're watching. You know, one of the contestants, whether it be that you're a parent or you're a brother or a cousin or an uncle or a best friend, everybody's been in situations where they've traveled and been on an adventure with somebody and something's gone wrong or they're frustrated. And so the show is very relatable. The other thing is, for people who don't get to travel to all these amazing exotic places around the world, you can kind of live vicariously through the people that are going there, or you can plan your next adventure or your next trip by watching the show. And it's ever changing. But ultimately what it comes down to is the show is about relationships, and we can all relate to that. So I think that's what keeps it going.
How did you and Bertram come up with the series in the first place? Was there something about the idea of traveling to all these distant lands that inspired you, or was it something that was a personal experience for either one or both of you that made this show go?
So I came up with the idea for The Amazing Race based on a personal experience I had had with a best friend of mine. She was my college roommate at the time, and it was our senior year, and as a graduation, you know, present to ourselves, we decided to go backpacking through Europe, which so many people do. And we had, I think we each had like $1,000, and we had a Ural pass. And we had a, you know, let's go, one of those books that, you know, tells you where you can go and what you can see. And we literally just kind of mapped out a route through Europe for about 4.5 weeks. And halfway through the trip, we had a little argument, or kind of a major argument. You know, we'd been getting up every day. We were living on chocolate and bread and wine. And halfway through the trip, I was like, come on, let's get up. It's 6 a.m. Let's go to the Vatican today. And she was just like, I am done. This is not Chevy Chase's European vacation. I am done. You know, I'll see you at the end of the day. So we had a bit of an argument. We did our own thing for the day, and we kind of cooled off. And by the end of the night, we met for a nice pasta dinner somewhere in Rome, and everything was good. But just the tension of traveling every day and kind of making decisions, where are we going to go? What are we going to do? It put a lot of stress on the relationship. So that idea, the idea for The Amazing Race came from that experience of two people who know each other traveling together around the world with different cultures. You don't speak the language. You're out of your comfort zone. And just what a wonderful adventure it would be for somebody to be able to watch this on television as other people experience this.
Mm-hmm. And something else, too, is that you get to relate over an extended period of time with each of these couples, these 11 couples that comprise each series. And you not only get to know them, but you also get to know them in a way that's very unique, which is you know that each of these couples is not only going these places one after the other, but they're doing it against the clock. They're doing it against each other. And they're also trying to keep their sanity, knowing that if they do, $1 million could be at the end of the rainbow.
Yeah, that's the huge added pressure. It's tough enough just to travel, but when you've got $1 million, you know, you have a very good chance out of 11 teams that after this 30-day adventure, you're going to be $1 million richer. That puts a huge stress, you know, on a couple as a team. And kind of the driving tension throughout the season is the more legs, the more episodes you stay in the race, the closer you are to winning that money. So the tension just builds and builds. Plus you're tired and you haven't really eaten well. And, you know, if someone says, I'm going to be the navigator and you read the maps, it doesn't always work out the way you plan it. And watching from home is a lot different than being in it. People at home are just like, why don't they just do this? Or didn't they read their clue? Or don't they see that clue box or the flag? It's very easy to say that when you're not in it. But when you're running and you have tunnel vision, you don't see all the signs and you don't see everything. So it's a whole other ball game when you're out there.
This new season that's coming up on CBS is quite unique because it's not just an opportunity for people who have done this competition before to have a second go, but you're also bringing in two of the other major CBS competition series that are ultra-reality, Big Brother and Survivor.
Yes. We call the season the Reality Showdown. We've heard so many times, the Big Brother people think that Amazing Race is so easy, or Survivor thinks that Amazing Race is so much harder for us. So we decided to pick super strong teams and people and create teams from all the top reality shows on CBS and really have a reality showdown. Who is the best? Who is the best of the best? And who can make their way through this Amazing Race and come out on top? So there was some fierce competition going into this and a lot of smack talking during the race because there's a lot of backstory for all these teams, and a lot of them know each other because in the reality world out there, they're friends. They all know each other. So it was a very exciting, very dramatic competition.
And probably more dramatic for the people who had done The Amazing Race, the series before, because it's sort of, not only do we have something to prove here, particularly if you didn't win it the first time around, but also we sort of have to raise the flag for our show and show people that, hey, Survivor people, Big Brother contestants, you are entering our ballpark here, so you got something to learn.
That's exactly right. There were people that came back, like Colin Christie, for example. They hadn't been on the show for probably almost 15 years. They were season 5. And they had a lot to prove. So did Leo and Jamal. This was like their third time around. Tyler and Corey, Art and AJ, Becca and Floyd, they all wanted to prove not only to themselves, but to the world that they were better than all the other teams. But then you have people like Rupert and Laura. I mean, Janelle and Brittany, Victor and Nicole, Rachel and Alyssa. I mean, all these super strong teams, great big personalities, super competitive, type A. You know, there were no weak links on this route, and there were no weak links within the competition with the contestants. So it was full on.
You are hearing Elise Stongeri. She is the creator and executive producer of The Amazing Race, which is going into its 31st race or season this Wednesday night, 9:30 Pacific time on your local CBS station. Elise joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour, and an interview exclusive on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Abner with you live from New York, the other coast of these United States, where it's 57 degrees at the top of the hour. We had a lot of rain. We had some wind, still some wind outside. But the buzz, I think, are starting to happen this mid-April, and the skies are now overcast, cloudy, gray, whatever. If you have a question or comment for Elise, don't be shy. Make the ring happen, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Don't forget, coming up on Friday's episode, we'll have the person that put E on the map, Larry Neighbor, now with his own production company, Meta Global Entertainment. He's got a reality competition of his own involving Bruce Lee. He calls it the Bruce Lee Project. It's in China. We'll see if it's going to come one way or the other to the United States. And he's also working on, well, originally it was announced as a television series. Now we understand it may be a film. It's called Empress. And I will talk about it. That's Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Tell. His thoughts also about where this whole U.S. TV world is at to him. How long does it take to put a season together? From the moment you and your crew say, here's where we're going to go, here's the contestants we're going to pick, and to when it goes on CBS?
Well, the whole pre-production, from casting, pre-production, scouting, putting the route together, and like locking the route before we leave, takes about 6 months. And then while we're out there filming, we're sending the media, the footage home to the loggers and the transcribers, and they're starting to download all the footage and the. Literally within a week of us, we're still out there on the road, we start to edit. And then typically we air the show usually a few months after we've finished filming. So that's kind of, you know, I would say about a year at the most. This one is coming around a little bit later because it's a big season and it's a huge cast. We also amped up all of the challenges. We didn't want these teams to come into the show thinking, oh, we're going to just do what we did last time. We took it to a higher level on this. So everything is amped up for the season.
Yeah. When you amp it up, well, before we get to amping first, on a regular season with just contestants for your show, mm-hmm. when you have your scouts go out around the world to pick the cities, and what happens in those cities? What do you look for? What about the city and its culture? And what about what you want to do, what the contestants do in that city that mm-hmm. has you determine, okay, we're going to use it for this race, for that city, for this race?
What we, you know, typically we Bertram and I will put a map on the wall. We call it the war room, and it's a map that covers the entire wall. We try to pick places that we haven't been to before, or if we've been to them before, they're places we get a lot of great television. You know, like India always brings us great television. Africa, places that are challenging. Americans are not used to traveling to these places and kind of roughing it. You know, we want to throw people off. And we like to switch it up between, you know, if we can find like hot weather to cold weather, like a lot of different environments. So what we do, we typically land in a location and we want to find things that locals do that typically an American or U.S. citizen doesn't do here. What is unique to that culture or that location? And then we try to come up with challenges with our challenge department as to turn things into a game or a challenge. You know, for example, in our first episode that's airing this Wednesday, we fly right to Tokyo, Japan. And I'm not going to tell you what they're doing, but something we kind of took a note from was the Japanese game show, which are very, very popular in Japan. These are super funny, super humorous, and that's kind of the theme we went through for that first episode, something that's typical in that area and not so typical here. And we just throw the contestants off right off the bat.
Oh, I've seen those game shows, whether they are in the original Japanese or translated for American television, like Kishi's Castle. They are a hoot, especially when you see these contestants. Like, announce yourself, I'm going to get this basketball, and they go right down the water kind of thing, or get splatted somehow in some way. And you said that, you're just like, feel so bad for these people, and you're laughing along with them, too. It's amazing. So I'm curious. I think it's going to be very interesting television when you get there.
It's going to be very fun. Yes, yes, yes. It's all inspired by the Japanese game show. So there's a lot of humor. I mean, we have every emotion in that first episode because they land in Tokyo and immediately it's a night show. They're bombarded with all the sights and sounds and the chaos of this giant city. And, you know, nobody's speaking Japanese and nobody's speaking English. So they're really thrown off, you know, balance right from the start.
Have there been over the years any problems trying to get into a city you want to go to and the local government or the national government says no way, no how?
You know, not that we've never been allowed into a location. In the beginning, when the show was first starting and we would scout and people, we would say, we're a TV show from America called The Amazing Race. The first couple of seasons, nobody knew what that was. And so we still have to go through all the same, you know, permits and meetings and things like that. It was a little bit harder because they didn't know what we wanted to do. And people want to make sure that we're being respectful of where we are and what we're doing. Now we literally have different cities and countries coming to us, whether it's through the tourism board or the film commission, saying, please come to our country because we know you're going to, you know, showcase our country. It's literally a 1-hour commercial for any place that we go to. So now, you know, we get asked, we get welcomed, you know, please, please come. So it's kind of nice.
What's an example of a city that you didn't know what to expect, but it turned out to be a really delightful and in terms of making great television, a surprise?
You know, I always, one of the places I always go back to because we've been going there since early, early seasons, and it was one of the first places I scouted, was Vietnam. And, you know, whatever your thoughts are about that country because of the things that have happened in the past, it is such a beautiful place to visit, and the people are friendly and welcoming, and I felt a lot of love. There's beautiful culture, the people are friendly, and I also just saw the country for how beautiful the country is. There's white sandy beaches and palm trees in certain areas of the country, and then there's beautiful jungles and beautiful water and mountains. It's a spectacular country with the people just as wonderful. You know, that was a nice surprise for me. And I tend to really love, like for me, when I travel, I love to go to all the Asian parts of the world. You know, I love China. I like Japan. I mean, I love everywhere because I love to travel. That's one of the reasons, you know, I came up with the show. It's just the world is such a spectacular place that if you don't have a passport, you got to go get one because you need to travel and not be so worried about what you think or hear, you know, your preconceived ideas about travel and culture and people. Go there and see it for yourself because, you know, we're all people and we all have families and we all have jobs and we're more alike than we're not. You know, we're more alike than we think. And that's, you know, anywhere I go, I just I embrace it. If you're nice to people, they'll be nice back, the way I feel.
Vietnam, by the way, was showcased recently a few months ago when President Trump had the very brief session with the head of North Korea. But also, Anthony Bourdain, when he passed away, one of the things that came out about his career doing his series, Parts Unknown, sorry, series for CNN Travel Channel, was that he loved Vietnam. He thought that that was one of the greatest places anyone could ever go to.
It really is. I can't explain it until you visit it. You know, it is a must. It's, you know, put that on the list of places to go. I really believe that. And places like Iceland, you know, I know you're in New York. I'm from New York. It's a 4.5-hour flight. And nobody's backing me to say this. It's just a unique place to travel to.
Well, a few more minutes with Elise Lunieri. She is the creator and executive producer of The Amazing Race, going into its 18th year this Wednesday night at 9:30 Pacific time on CBS. And if a question or comment, ring it in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room. We have three people in the chat room already, and that's SimonApple04. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com. And again, we are launching a brand-new chat room format today. So let me know what you think about it. Email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. What are some of the interesting places that you're going to be showcasing on this particular series?
In this season, we're going to some beautiful, beautiful places. We are going to Vietnam. We're going to go to Laos. We're going to Dubai, Uganda, Croatia, the Netherlands, Switzerland, England. I mean, it's really quite a diverse route as far as terrain and weather. We kind of throw them into, you know, the washing machine of options of places. They're going to hit, you know, pretty much, you know, super, super hot, humid, and then chilly, cold. You know, we kind of hit it all. You know, it's all over the map, literally.
Elise, is there, after all these years, a place that you still would like to have The Amazing Race do something in?
There's so many places. You know, we have a format that does amazingly well in Israel. Israel is a place that I would love to go with the race and personally. And like places like Kathmandu, you know, like really exotic sounding places, you know, the base of Everest, things like that. But there are certain places that are just not, you know, there are not enough flights. Sometimes there's like 2 flights a week. So there are some really like remote places that I'd love to go to. It just doesn't work within the constraints of our route and the time frame that we have to film in. So, but there's still many places in Africa, but there's also places we love to go back to, or I love to go back to. I love to go to Morocco. I love to go to Italy. My family's from Italy. You know, there's certain places that I can't wait to get back to, but, you know, you got to switch it up every season. But we've gone to most of the places that we really want to go to. I'd love to hear what people think and where they'd like to see us go next. I'd love to see if, you know, somebody would say, go here, come here, you know.
Yeah. What about here in the United States or Canada or sort of in the North America side of the woods?
Canada many times. And we also do a Canadian version of the show, which is very popular in Canada. In the United States, we did a version in season 8 where we went through a lot of the East Coast and a lot of the West Coast. We always start and finish in the U.S., so we like to, you know, showcase a start city and a finale city. And we try to mix up the finale cities, and I think we did a pretty good job of that this season. We have a great finale. And that's in the U.S. So, yeah, I mean, the U.S., we have a really beautiful country, and we also have lots of different terrain and different cultures here, too. We have snow, we have desert, we have, you know, plains and pastures. So, you know, there's a lot of places still to go. I mean, the beauty of the show is we never run out of locations to go to. And, you know, the world is our backdrop. So we're very lucky with that.
Year 18, season 31 of The Amazing Race begins this Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on CBS. Check locally to the CBS station in your area for more details about this series, which has won 10 Emmy Awards as Outstanding Reality Competition Program over its run. Go to CBS.com. The Amazing Race, latest edition, this Wednesday night on CBS. Alisa Derry, the creator and executive producer of the program with Bernard Munster and a wonderful crew. I had a great host, Phil Kogan. Thank you very much for finally coming on our show. We really appreciate it. Have a great time with season 31. And all the very best to you and everybody involved for a continued fantastic run. It's been a great pleasure having you on.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Take care. Have a super week.
Bye-bye.
Alisa Derry from The Amazing Race joining us live from Los Angeles. And speaking of CBS, a final comment. Yesterday, there was very special history made. Tiger Woods finally, at long last, for the first time in a decade, winning a major golf tournament, and 15 years after he won his last Masters green jacket. If you saw that television program from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. live on your local CBS station, you saw one very magical golf tournament. And congratulations to everybody involved at CBS, especially the on-camera crew, Jim Nantz, Nick Faldo, Vern Lundquist was so marvelous in the 16th hole, and everybody else involved for a spectacular weekend at Augusta National Golf Club. I am not the biggest fan of the club. I love the tournament, can't stand the club, but I have to say this. Great for them that they allowed CBS yesterday to show all 18 holes of that spectacular final round that Tiger had. And also congratulations to them for also doing their first women amateur tournament. Long overdue. Maybe it's time the LPGA talked to Augusta National about doing a stop just for them. It'd be great to see the great professional ladies golfers from all over the world at one of the best golf courses in the world, the Augusta National Golf Club in Georgia. And again, congratulations to CBS for outstanding Masters coverage yesterday. Friday here to Movie Televised, Larry Namer, the former head of E! And Movie Time, joining us to talk about what he's doing in China and what he may be doing down the road here in the U.S. as the head of Mekong Global Entertainment. And don't forget, next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we're with you for back-to-back-to-back episodes, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. And if you missed today's episode, or you want to catch up an episode to miss, well, and came away too, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. And check out the podcast version anytime you like. It's over at iTunes, Apple TV, the Spreaker Podcast app, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network at iHeartRadio.com. And one more time before we go, here's the classic trivia question of the week. Since this movie DVD in Play Is Your Prize, what music group made the theme from SWAT a number one hit in the 1970s? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Put your name and your full mailing address down, and who knows? You might win by Friday, our next episode, the Since This Movie DVD. We love hearing from you. So, again, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. What do you think about our episode today? What do you think about the great talent of women producing and creating their own TV series? Not just the other ones, too. A lot more from where they came from as well. We'd love to hear what you think. And what's your thought about where TV is at and where it's going? Again, email me or find me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonCWET. However you communicate with us, we communicate back. Why? Because what you say matters, and it really, really does. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants. Also, the Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and iHeartRadio. Our production associate at Blog Talk and Spreaker is Candace Williams. Annie Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager. Jay Steinberg is executive content producer. And the co-founders of BTR are Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow We Televised is brought to you today by Audible.com, an Amazon company and private development partner of the annual New York Television Festival. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. For three free audiobooks and a one-month trial, audibletrial.com/televised. Tomorrow We Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your Monday and your week. We're back on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Block Talk Radio Speaker and the iRadio Podcast Network. Remember, today is tax day, so if you haven't gotten yours in yet, please do so before midnight tonight. You'll feel so much better for it. And whatever you're up to this week, please make it safe and make it great. And as always, until next time, stay well and stay tuned.